Coronavirus hits to the airline industry just keep coming. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. An airline struggling during this pandemic barely makes headline news these days, but Australia's flag carrier Qantas has a particular set of problems. Today, the airline reported a more than $1 billion annual loss and says 4,000 planned job cuts will be finalized by the end of September. The pain's not over. The company's boss said COVID-19 will test the survival of many in the industry and warned that he expects a significant loss in the next financial year. The airline doesn't expect to resume international flights until next July at the earliest. From Sydney, the BBC's Simon Atkinson explains what's put Qantas in such a painful position.
A promotional email I got from Qantas this week was sobering. In normal times, it'd be packed with enticing destinations, but this one offered me just one deal out of Sydney, a flight within the same state to Byron Bay. Unlike pretty much anywhere else in the world, Australia's government has banned its people from leaving the country. You can apply for an exemption, but few are given. So that's killed the international business. Hardly anyone's allowed in either. Even Aussies are struggling to return, with tight caps on the number of people who can do the mandatory hotel quarantine. Domestic travel is where Qantas really thrived. Flights between the two biggest cities, Sydney and Melbourne, were a cash cow. But now, almost every state and territory has shut its borders to everyone else, so options for travel are slim. In the capital, Canberra, the airport has so few passengers that some days it's now closing altogether. Qantas is a brand many Australians love, and among those who can still afford it, there's pent-up demand to fly again as soon as possible. But it feels it'll be a long time until those promo emails are chock-a-block once more. In Sydney, I'm the BBC's Simon Atkinson for Marketplace.
Checking financial markets now, global stocks are lower after minutes from the Fed's last meeting showed policymakers doubted the strength of the U.S. economic recovery from COVID-19. Meanwhile, a possible breakthrough in the ongoing U.S.-China trade spat, Beijing's foreign ministry today said the world's two biggest economies have agreed to hold talks in the coming days. Asian benchmarks ended the session solidly in the red today, and stocks on this side of the world are following suit. The Pan-European Stock 600 Index is down 1.2%. Oil prices are also drifting lower after OPEC and its allies warned a second wave of COVID-19 could stand in the way of an oil market recovery this year. Brent crude and West Texas Intermediate are both down about 1%. Since last Sunday's controversial election in Belarus, which gave President Alexander Lukashenko a sixth term, many tens of thousands of people have taken to the streets of the country's capital, Minsk, to protest what they view as an unfair election. EU leaders this week rejected the results and agreed to impose sanctions on a substantial number of officials, while workers have gone on strike across the country. The BBC's Ed Butler explains how the ongoing unrest could impact the nation's economy.
In the face of widespread protests, Belarus's strongman Alexander Lukashenko is struggling to keep control. Workers across the country are striking. Around a third of journalists at the state broadcaster have downed tools. But entrepreneurs in the country's successful and growing tech sector are also worried. Several hundred of them have this week put their names to a petition to release prisoners and hold a new election. One of them is angel investor Maria Lemazar.
People are still being kidnapped by the police. My close friend and also one of the founder of IT company, he was kidnapped at his doorstep and disappeared. Last Friday, he was released and his story shocked because it was a lot of violence, killed people.
He saw people being killed inside police custody?
Yes, yes, he saw.
So what is the country's economy based on?
Belarus is probably much more Soviet and command economy than the neighboring countries.
And what sort of potential does it have? Sergei Gurdjieff is a professor at Sciences Po in Paris. He's a former chief economist at the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development.
The state sector occupies something like 3/4 of the economy. Most export to Russia. Many of these enterprises are inefficient and subsidized through state bank loans by eventually Russian subsidies. The biggest challenge for the future of the Belarusian economy is indeed to privatize in a fair, competitive, transparent way to avoid creation of oligarchs.
So Russia's response to the protests is likely to be key to how things work out. The country has promised logistical support to Mr. Lukashenko, but it's not clear just how much will be forthcoming. In the meantime, entrepreneurs like Maria Lemazar are concerned that the threat of job losses against striking workers may crush their spirits.
I understand the people in the factory because they have families. You know, like people can lose their job. If you have to pay a loan, of course you can be afraid to strike. I really hope that we can find some peaceful way to win and to have freedom.
Are you confident?
No, I'm not.
Uncertain times then for the people and businesses of Belarus, and signs it could get much tougher yet before this president opts to compromise. I'm the BBC's Ed Butler for Marketplace.
Finally, efforts to stop the spread of coronavirus have pushed many commuters off trains and buses and onto two wheels. Like so many around the world, several of us in the BBC Business Unit have opted to take up cycling as our primary mode of transportation. That's contributed to boom times for the bike industry. A survey from Germany's IFO Institute found, unlike many other goods manufacturers, bike makers are extremely satisfied with current business conditions. That's as demand for entry-level and mid-range bikes has been strongly outstripping supply. Have you taken the two-wheeled plunge this summer? Let us know all your best bike tips. I'm at Victoria Craig on Twitter. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.